As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this? A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy!
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds!
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. Terms and restrictions apply.
Late night, midnight on the interstate, and I didn't feel so great until I saw the city.
Welcome back to Straight from the Source of Michael Rousseau. Thanks, as always, for tuning in. If you're not an Athletic subscriber, well, what are you waiting for? Now is the time. TheAthletic.com/straightfromthesource will get you in for $3.99 per month. I've paid more for a nitro cold brew this morning. A lot more, by the way. Really hope that you join up, especially with the Wild playing so well. 8-3, 7-1 goal wins. In fact, I'm so used to one goal wins. They won 5-2 the other night, and I tweeted they had another one goal win. 7 come from behind victories, and not just come from behind victories. We're talking like buzzer beaters, just dramatic overtime wins. It's been a fun start to the season. I'm sure Dean Evason would like a nice little 4-0, 5-0, easy peasy type of win. But man, the Wild are making it fun, and they're getting depth scoring up and down their lineup. And Kaprizov and Fiala still haven't taken off yet, but Ryan Hartman's got 6 goals, getting go-ahead goals, buzzer beaters, tying goals, everything lately. Marcus Foligno, to me, has been just absolutely superb. 4 goals, Eriksson Ek, 4 goals, Bjugstad, Sturm, Duhaime, all scoring goals. They got 32 points from their defensemen. Doesn't matter what cast of characters the Wild have on their back end, they always seem to get points, and they're right near the top of the league. So it's been a fun start to the Wild season, riding a 3-game winning streak into tonight's 8 p.m. game here in the desert. Kaapo Kähkönen will get his second consecutive start. He won the game the other night against the New York Islanders, and with the Wild playing on the second of a back-to-back tomorrow night in Vegas, they are going to give Kähkönen, who played well the other night, a chance to go up against the one-win Coyotes tonight. Hopefully everybody reads my Jacob Chychrun, Brandon Duhaime piece that I wrote in today. Just a really cool story. We hear all the time about, you know, kids in the NHL that played together in youth, but it doesn't happen a lot in South Florida. And these kids, Duhaime and Chychrun, started playing together when Chychrun was 4 and Duhaime was 5, ended when Duhaime was 14 and Chychrun was 13, played together throughout those years. Even Andrew Peak, the defenseman for the Columbus Blue Jackets, was on that team. In fact, a picture we didn't use, there were 5 kids in the picture and 3 are in the NHL, and these guys grew up in South Florida. But Chychrun, who's a star in this league, just really, man, if he was in any other market, he'd be a David Backus is like go-to quote. He's that good. So hopefully everybody reads that piece, because it's just so many cool anecdotes, so many great quotes, and I think it'll be really neat for those two to go together against on national TV tonight on TNT. My guest today on the podcast, Tom Reed, the longtime color analyst of the Minnesota Wild, the proprietor of Tom Reed's Hockey City Pub, one of the greatest, I think it's the greatest hockey bar that I've ever been to in North America, and just it's a museum of memorabilia. But it's story time with Tom. I mean, it's just a laugh out loud, funny podcast. That guy has story after story, even when we stopped recording, he started telling me this just hilarious story about him being in the hospital, high-sticked in the eye. He gets a call from Ren Blair's secretary and saying, hey, you didn't make this last road trip. We prepaid you $12 a per diem. You owe us that back. And by the way, how's your eye? And I'm like, that would have been perfect for the podcast. But there's just so many hilarious stories, pranks, guys that he played against. It's just, I mean, he's, you know, lifetime in hockey. It's just, it's amazing. And, you know, and he doesn't take any of it for granted that he's got to be in this incredible game for so long. So many Bob Kurtz stories, so many Lou Nanny stories, so many JP Parisi stories. He talks about playing against guys like John Beliveau and playing with guys like Stan Mikita. And of course, we get to the Wild's exciting start to the season. So really hope everybody enjoys this podcast. Before we get to our podcast, here is a word from some of our sponsors.
Looking for an assist with your credit card, but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/credit card.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/credit card.
Well, as mentioned, the proprietor of the greatest hockey sports bar in the world. I was going to say North America, but why?
Was good. We were going to the top three in the world.
So exactly.
We'll take that.
Tom Reed, thanks for joining us straight from the source. We're sitting on this incredible courtyard here in Glendale, Arizona. You got the waterfall in the background. It's pristine. It's peaceful. It feels like we're on vacation from Kevin Faulness.
You know, it's interesting too, Mike. I remember.
You missed the joke.
I didn't even hear what you said.
I said that we're on vacation with Kevin Faulness.
From Kevin Faulness. No, you're right. Well, that was a joke.
Yeah. Peaceful.
Yeah, it is peaceful. You know, it's interesting because I was talking to some of the guys last night, and I remember breaking in with Chicago in 1967, all right, with the Blackhawks. And, of course, that was the first year of expansion from 6 to 12 teams. And we're out in California, and I'm in the car with Sam Mikita and Bobby Hull, and we're going to the practice rink, and I'm and we're all saying, boy, how could anybody ever play hockey in this type of wet weather? You know, I know it's not cold weather we're used to, but you know what? I think I could do it.
Yeah.
I think I could do it now. When you watch these players come in the rinks, so we get to Florida, we get out here, and they're in, you know, flip-flops and shorts and everything else coming in, and we got the winter boots on, the winter coats and the hats and everything else. So it's different, but it's pretty nice. This is a great place to be.
Yeah, maybe that's why Arizona's become the landing spot for, like, retired players and dead cat money. I'll just go make my millions there and not even ever have to play. It's pretty awesome. I mean, the one thing also, if Wild fans and a lot of Wild fans make this jaunt, what's so cool about this hotel that the Wild stay at is it's 100 yards from the entrance of the arena. And that's my biggest concern about where's the Arizona Coyotes going? We're going to lose that great convenience of being in this hotel.
Yeah, and you're right. Where they're going to go, I have no idea. Yeah. But it's still Arizona. So
yeah.
We should have good weather wherever we go in this area. But it's a shame because, you know, it's a nice arena, just mm-hmm. in the wrong location.
Yeah. Yeah. And they're thinking of, I drove in an Uber down to Scottsdale the other day and I saw the spot that they're thinking of putting the new arena. The question is, where do they go? Because they are apparently being kicked out of here right off the hop after this year. So where do they go for those couple of years while they build the arena? That's going to be the biggest question, because I used to cover games at the old America West Arena. That's the Suns Arena. And I don't even think they have an ice plant there anymore. So I don't think you could. And remember, I don't know if you remember the end zones there. You couldn't see
the goal line.
I don't think you could put a team back there, so yeah, I don't know what they're going to do.
You know, I was doing television at the time, and so we had a few games we didn't do mm-hmm. on air, and so I went and sat down to watch the warm-up. As I sat down, I said, where's the goaltender? Couldn't see the goalie, couldn't see the goal line, nothing.
Yeah.
And that was, I mean, it was built for basketball, obviously.
Yeah, no doubt about it. Let's see, where do we start? I mean, like, let's go back. I mean, you've been the Wild play-by-play guy now for, or color analyst now for 21 years. Before that, worked with Kurtz doing North Star games. Before that, played for the North Stars. First of all, I mean, how tough was it to end the playing career and then step right into the booth?
It was a little difficult. You know, I didn't expect to have to end my career, and I quit because I became allergic to my hockey equipment.
Yeah,
that's the only, and we could never figure out what the problem was because we tried everything. But in 1978, I mean, I spent a lot of time in the hospital in that 77-78 year trying to correct it, trying to get it taken care of, and it would be fine. I'd come out in 2 weeks later and back in again. So mm-hmm. finally, the doctors in Marshfield, Wisconsin, said, we can't give you any more steroids or cortisone shots or things like that because you'll be dead by the time you're 40. Well, that pretty well sealed it for me at that point. But I remember Walter Bush calling me, and he said, would you be interested in doing the radio with Al Shaver? And, you know, I talk to Al every few weeks. I give him a call. He's still on Vancouver Island, lives in Qualicum Beach, and I think he's 94 years old now. A great guy, and he still follows the game. He sounds good. He knows the team. He talks about Kaprizov. He talks about the different players, and so he's really in touch with it. But Al's been, you know, he retired when he was 65 years old.
Yeah.
And now here he is 94, but he's had a great life. So, and Bob Kurtz and I had a couple of times have taken the ferry across the water and rented a car, and, you know, and gone to visit with him up there. So it was kind of fun.
But yeah, I love listening to I love listening to Wally, and it isn't Wally's son does the Chicago Wolves.
Right,
yeah,
right,
I met him in Iowa a couple years ago. But I love listening to Wally and just and all those Gopher games and just his voice and everything. It kind of brings me to like what it must have been like to listen to Al Shaver and to be
and
the pride of being in the Al Shaver press box is pretty awesome.
Yeah, Al was absolutely a gem to work with too.
What was it like working with Kurtzy? Because you guys were attached to the hip. You're still attached to the hip. He's doing 20 something games, but he's a cartoon character. There's no doubt about it.
I mean, yeah, it's interesting because when I was doing the radio with Al a couple of years, and then Walter Bush called me again and said, would you ever consider doing TV? And I, you know, as a kid growing up, I couldn't talk in front of people.
Mm-hmm.
I couldn't talk in front of my classmates. When I had to do book reports and so on, it was really difficult. And I thought, if I don't at least give an attempt at it, I'll never know. And the same thing with playing in the NHL. When I got an invite to Chicago, I wanted to be a recreation director. That's what I wanted to do.
Wow.
And so I thought, if I don't at least attempt it, will I regret it someday not doing it? So I went, and Bob was, we just talked back and forth on air, kind of a audition tape. And they brought me in, and it was tough. And the first game I ever did was in Denver.
McNichols?
At McNichols Arena. Yeah. And it was Carrie Fraser's first game also as a referee. And nobody trained me. Nobody told me what an IFB was. All of a sudden, there's people talking in my ear. I'm thinking, where are these people? I had no idea. But it actually turned out pretty well. And Bob was great to work with. And we built such a common interest in different things, too. I mean, we've hiked the Grand Canyon together. We've gone to Alaska together. We've done all kinds of things together. And so it's been a great ride for both of us. And
you
of
guys
course, he's still doing a few more games.
So. Yeah. I mean, you guys are both. I mean, you're brothers. I mean, it's pretty awesome to watch your relationship. And, you know this business, Tom. A lot of play-by-play guys and their color analysts do not get along. We see it in the press room before games, the guys that don't get along. And and just for you to still have that relationship when you've been in each other's ears for 40 years, it's pretty neat.
Yeah, and the thing is with Bob, I mean, he calls such a good game. And, you know, Joe's doing a terrific job right now, too. I mean, he works hard at it, and he's excited about doing it, too. But I've always said, you know what? In 50 years, nobody is going to know who I am anyway. So it doesn't really matter. Just do your job, have fun with it, and it's great when you have a team like the Wild right now.
Yeah. I mean,
they're a fun team to work with.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. What's your favorite Bob Kurtz story? I know like some of the ones that you've told me that I love the one where you were helping him move or he was helping you move. And
I've moved him, I think, 12 times.
But what was the incident in the back of the truck where like didn't one of you like fall out of the truck or something?
No, I don't. We could have. We may have been drinking at the time. I don't know.
I'm messing up the story. I know that I'm messing. I'm definitely messing up the story.
One of the funniest stories, when we were doing the broadcast in Detroit, was at the Joe Louis Arena at that time. And afterwards, they always had pizza, like Little Caesars, pizza and beer for the media, which doesn't happen anymore. But we went down there and have a few beers and some pieces of pizza. And then we had rented a car because we were doing Channel 9 at the time, KMSP TV. And so we were not staying in the same hotel as the players. We traveled on our own. We didn't have to worry about, you know, getting on a team bus and stuff like that. And so we get on the highway going back to the airport, and Bob says, "Boy, I should have gone to the bathroom before I before I left." I said, "Well, I said, you can't pull off in the middle of the highway." I said, "You know what? We're almost there. We're 10 minutes away." And he said, "I'm in agony." You know, he says, "Oh, why didn't I go to the bathroom first?" And we went on and on about this. And I said, "Oh, we're almost there. Don't worry about it." And now we get out of the car, and it's one of those quickly where you throw your keys in the box and you get in the elevator and up you go. Well, unbeknownst to him, we're on the fourth floor. So he gets in, and he's bent over, and he's in agony. And when he's not looking, I hit three. So all of a sudden, the elevator door opens. He runs out. He gets about 20 feet out, and he looks up, and he realizes wrong floor. He turns around. He says, "We're on the wrong floor," as the elevator doors are closing with me waving goodbye to him. I don't know if he did it or not. I never did ask him.
He just took a leak on the carpet or something. That is hilarious. I have this like recollection as you were telling that story of, remember we were like following each other to Napa, and you guys are following me.
And you didn't know you're
and
going.
Immediately I like realized that I was about to pass the highway, and I like just jut to the right to get onto the on-ramp, and I look back at you, and you're like, "What the hell?" As you fly by and miss the exit.
You tried to lose us, you did.
I'm like, that's brutal. I love your bag, by the way. Minnesota North Stars. How old is that bag?
That is from 1981.
Wow. That is pretty neat.
Yeah.
Brown leather briefcase, essentially. Yeah. It's just awesome. Old school. You mentioned pranks. I know that you were a huge prankster. Daniel asks, what was the best prankster that you've ever played with?
Ever played with?
Yeah.
Charlie Burns.
Right.
Charlie Burns. And I talked to his wife just the other day. Charlie's in pretty bad shape. He lives out in Hartford, Connecticut. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And but he was a prankster as well. And I learned a lot from him. And we were pulled, you know, things all the time. Like Brian Hextall, for example, when we played with both Brian and Dennis Hextall, and I came into a game early one time, and I took the game socks, which are dark green, and I replaced his socks with white socks, the away socks, and I told all the guys, "Don't say anything." So he gets all dressed, he's got, puts on his jersey, goes up, he's got white socks on. Everybody else has got green. So he gets on the ice, he's skating around, and some guy hollers to him, "Hey, Hextall, are you colorblind?" And all of a sudden he realized that he was not very happy, because in order to change the socks, you have to take just about everything off. So in between. I did that with him. And one time in Oakland, I took Louis' sweater and I switched it with mine. And so he's out there, and I kept skating in front of him, and he never realized that I was nanny in front of him.
That is hysterical.
And some guy's hollering at me, "Hey, Louie, remember me? I met you one time." He's hollering at me. I'm not Lou Nanny. I'm Tom Reed. And so there's lots of things we did. Charlie was one of the worst, though. He was, when it comes to pranks, he was ruthless.
Yeah.
But they were funny pranks. They weren't mean.
Not to break the news to you, but he did pass away.
I talked to his wife 3 days ago. And, he had fallen. He had a brain bleed, and she called me, and we talked for a little bit. But Charlie was a character. In fact, Charlie was a playing coach with the North Stars back in the early 70s.
Mm-hmm.
And we were rooming together when they made him coach. I said, "Charlie, I can't live with you." I said, "You're the coach." He says, "Oh, you won't see me. I won't see you." And he was right. We never saw each other. So one Saturday morning, we have a meeting at 10 o'clock, and I get up about, it's probably at 17 minutes to 10. I'd been out the night before, and my alarm didn't go off, or I didn't hear it. I jump out of bed. I get dressed and go by. He's still in bed. I said, "Charlie." I says, "Get your clothes. I'll go and get the car. I'll wait for you." Well, because we're right across the street. We're kitty corner to where the Met Center was. And so he gets in the car. We get there. Well, I come in 2 minutes late.
Uh-huh.
All right. And all the guys are hooting and hollering. The fine's $25. I'm not paying $25. You know, and Charlie comes in and says, "What's the problem?" And they said, "Well, he's 2 minutes late. He looked at me and says, $25 fine."
Sorry.
I'm late because of you.
Yeah, I didn't tell that. Yeah. I didn't tell the guy that at the time. I didn't want to get him in trouble. But yeah, he was
in the day. It felt like when I first started covering the league, the writers really had good relationships with the players. I think that's dissipated a little just because of social media and all that stuff. You know, podcasts. I mean, you have many ways you can kind of piss off a player these days. What were the relationships like that you guys had with the beat writers? And did you ever play any jokes on the beat writers?
Oh yeah, we would sure we did. We'd hide their in those days they had typewriters. We would hide the typewriter. Or when Sid Hartman came in the room, Sid always had that big box, that recorder.
He had it till he died.
I would take it and I put it in the freezer. And then one time Sid came in and we're talking to him. He's got this long trench coat on, and he was talking about how nice new coat he just bought. And so as I was going into the shower, I put it on and walked into the shower with it on. he was not a happy guy. But we always had a pretty good relationship with the media. I remember Charlie Hallman wrote something nasty about Dennis Hexall one time. And I came upstairs off the ice, and Dennis is chasing Charlie Hallman with his stick, and he's swinging the stick at him. And so I had to go and grab Dennis and told Charlie, get the hell out of here because I can only hold him for so long.
I had a couple of physical little issues with players back when I first started, too. It's pretty, it's always an interesting relationship that the player has with a beat writer. I mean, it's.
Yeah, and I don't have a closer relationship with the players now. And, and I prefer that.
Yeah.
I like to say hi and talk to them and so on. But, my role as, as an analyst is talk about the players, and sometimes I have to say a poor decision. I don't want to destroy the player.
Right.
But maybe, it's an incorrect move by the player.
Yeah.
Things like that. So you're trying to keep an even keel with the
Right. That brings me to a question from Brian Good. He says, when with play-by-play during hockey games, how difficult sometimes is it for you to find space to provide commentary? Like, how do you pick your spots? Because, as you know, no play-by-play guy likes when the color guy's talking over his goal call and things like that.
Right, and I did that with Joe because a lot of times I can read what's going to happen before it happens. And so I try to be very selective when I'm talking. I don't want to talk over the play-by-play guy. And Bob and I had it worked out pretty well. We very seldom did we miss anything, but very seldom did I ever talk over him when the goal was going to be scored. But sometimes it just happens. It could be a quick turnover the blue line, and you're going one way, and I start something, and now I've got to get out, or I've got to just stop altogether.
Right.
That's my thought later on.
What was it like last season doing games remotely? I mean, was that difficult for you, or was it easier?
It was difficult for me. Bob enjoyed it because, we're limited by what we can see. And as you know, on the TV monitor we just had one very small segment of the ice, so we couldn't see the back referee. We couldn't see the other. When did the goalie come out?
Yeah.
What's happening on the bench? Is somebody hurt? I mean, you had no idea. But I think we handled it pretty well. And Bob actually enjoyed doing it. I'd rather be at the site itself.
Right.
Because I think you get more talking to the media, talking to the players, talking to the coach and stuff like that, rather than just doing everything by Zoom and,
How much of a throw will it be for you to do the Winter Classic? And, that we will be a ways away in the press box.
Well, we did the outdoor game.
Yeah, that's true.
We did that against Chicago, and we're a long ways away from that
one was
that
big.
Field.
Yep.
But it was fun. It was fun. It's a great experience. And, we're going to miss things here and there. On radio, we only have a couple of us. Three of us with Kevin with the home games. But the TV, you've got a lot more. You got like 34 different people looking with replay operators. So they can tell you what's happening sometimes when you can't see it. Who got the goal or how to hit a stick or they have that. We don't have that luxury on radio. But we didn't miss much.
Yeah.
We really didn't. I think there was one time last year that Bob and I both missed a goal. For whatever, I could have been writing something down at the time. But we both missed it. We just didn't see it.
Yeah.
That's the only time in all the years we've worked together that happened.
Yeah. Hideki asks, benefits of doing radio over TV, besides the obvious, we don't get to see your pretty face, but what's the benefit of doing radio?
You want the young, good-looking guys on TV, not the old guys.
You don't have to put on makeup anymore and all that.
Yeah. TV was fun, but, you get to a point that I did TV from started 1980 until the year 2021 to the Gophers. I've done Michigan State. I've done NCAA. I've done all kinds of different things, hockey-wise.
Yeah.
A lot of it with Bob, too. But it just got, you know, I don't need TV anymore.
Yeah.
Just do the radio. It was radio. We do hockey. We don't talk about other things very often. It's all about the game itself, which I think. And radio, we have to paint the picture. We have to let you know where the puck is, where the face on, what direction they're going. I mean, all of those things play into the listening audience, so they have a visual of what we're doing.
What's your best Lou Nanny story?
Oh, boy. Well, with Louie, there's a lot of stories.
Yeah. You know?
I mean, Louie and I have been friends for a long time. And in fact, we were together the other day. But Louie and I and JP and Murray Oliver, of course, the last two guys are deceased now. And we went to Vietnam together back in the early 70s on a USO tour to visit with the troops over there. And Louie is one of if there's one sandwich, and it's 100 yards away, and there's 100 people going for it, Louie will get that sandwich. I guarantee you. It's all about food with Louie. And he would eat breakfast and get right up from the table and go right upstairs to our pregame meal and have another meal. I mean, and he never gained weight. I mean, strong, fast, fun to be with. But we're playing a game in Pittsburgh, and Louie was doing trying to do a little bit of a toe drag on the wing coming down, and there's a defenseman named Dennis Outshire. Good name for a defenseman, hard-hitting defenseman. And as Louie was doing a toe drag, you know, all his chin's out there, and Dennis hit him right on the button. Down goes Louie. He hits his head. He's out. He's on the ice. And I'm standing over him, and he's starting to come to. And I said, Louie, before you go, can I have your condominium in Florida? And that's the only thing he remembers. Sorry.
That is hilarious. Tell us about Vietnam, that whole trip.
Vietnam was really interesting. I mean, they took good care of it, but I tell you, you appreciate the United States or Canada when you go over there and you see what you have to live with over there with the troops and so on. Troops were great to us. They did their best to take, you know, they took good care of us, that's for sure. But it was really difficult. And to be away from their families, and I think of all these troops that are, you know, in the Middle East and what they're going through, people have no idea. They have no idea. And when they don't take off their hat in the national anthem, or they don't stand, or they don't salute the flag, I mean, it's mind-boggling to me, because you don't know what the other side is like until you go over there. But we were over there, and that's another food story with Louis. We go to this restaurant, and it's on a boat. And we hear this gunfire. We're saying, "What is that?" And our escort, who's our guard as well, he's carrying the gun. He says, a lot of times the Viet Cong, they'll try and swim underneath the boat and put a bomb there and blow it up. I said, "Well, let's eat in a hurry." But Louis wanted to have a fondue. Well, nobody else wanted a fondue, but he was going to have one, so he had a fondue. But you know, one piece of meat at a time is not going to do it.
Yeah.
So he takes the whole bowl of meat and he puts it into the pot, so it's all cooking at the same time. Then he wanted to get out, so he grabs the pot, and as he lifts it up, the handle turns,
and
the whole thing turns, and all the oil, the hot oil, the food, everything, all over the table. And that's Louis is famous. When I used to eat dinner with Louis, I always put a napkin over the shoulder, whatever side he was on, because I knew something was going to be splashing pretty soon.
One of my biggest honors was just honestly getting to know JP and how much access Zach and JP gave to me when JP was unfortunately going through his health at the end there. And how tough was that for you? And JP was also like, guy was hilarious. I mean, you know, like he had this just way about him.
We were in Vancouver, and he was rooming with Bill Goldsworthy. In those days, we all had roommates. We didn't have our own rooms as they have today.
Things are different today.
Yeah, and we had adjoining rooms, and Barry Gibbs and I were in one room, and through the adjoining door was JP and Goldie. So I went in there, and JP wasn't back yet, and Goldie was there. And so they had heating blankets, so I switched the controls. And I told Goldie, I said, "I'm switching the controls, so he's operating your side, really, and you're operating his, but don't touch it, just leave it up high." So JP comes in and says, "Oh, well, good to have these blankets nice and warm." He crawls in the bed, turns it up high, and pretty soon, "Oh, it's really getting hot in here. I got to turn this blanket down." He turns it down from 10 to 7, and it's still hot in here. Now it's down to 5, and pretty soon it's down to 3, and then it's turned off. And he says, I can't get the heat out of here. The goalie looks over, and he's fanning the sheets, trying to get the heat out of the bed. The blanket is still on high. Before he finally he's following the cord, he's going to unplug it, and he follows it, and he sees where it's attached to. JP was great. He was a great guy. Hated the helicopter rides we had over in Vietnam because we had no doors and they had machine gunners on both sides.
Like MASH.
And I sat right there looking down, 5,000 feet. And JP was in the middle with his head down, eyes closed, hanging on to the bar underneath the seat.
Unbelievable. I feel honored honored or insulted that you haven't really played any practical jokes over on me over the years. The one thing that you used to do to me all the time when I first started in Minnesota, really not even when I first started, you do it as recent as like last week, is you always come up to me, you're like, have you heard? And every time I bite, I'm like, what? What did I miss? I'm like, you know? And you've been doing that to me for 17 years. Yeah. Have you heard?
I still do to a few people and it's still.
Yeah. I was talking to Madonna the other day. We were talking about Kaprizov and I'm like, what did you make in your second contract? He's like, $125,000, $125,000, which still back in the day is pretty good. A little different than Kaprizov's $9 million. What was yours?
You know, I made the first All-Star team in the OHA that year. Brian Glennie and I was playing for the St. Catharines Blackhawks, which is the junior farm team of the Blackhawks, and that's where Makita and Hull and all the different star players came up through the ranks. And so I got the invitation to come to training camp, and I wanted to be a recreation director, as I said earlier. And I thought, you know what? I got to give it. If I don't give it a shot, I'll always wonder. So I went to camp and had a good camp. And Mr. Ivan called me in and he said, we'd like to sign you to a contract. It's going to be a two-way contract. And if you stay in the NHL, it's going to be $10,000 a year and $5,000 for the minors. And we're going to give you a signing bonus of $500. We didn't have agents. Yeah. I had no idea. What would I know? I'm a kid from a town of 9,000 people. Nobody didn't know anybody. Hockey. So I signed it, $10,000 for the year. Now, they took $1,500 out to pay because we started the Players Association that year. So I took left me $8,500. Now they took the taxes out. By the end of the year, I'm down to about maybe $6,500. And that was to sustain me for the whole year.
Wow.
And so we all had to work in the summer. But I was out with Stan Bikita and Chico Mackey. And we're out west somewhere. I can't remember what city it was, but Stan had said to me, how's you doing your contract? I said, it did pretty good. You did? I said, yeah. How would I know? He said, what'd you get? And I said, well, Mr. Ivan asked me not to say anything. And he said, well, tell us, because it helps us in our negotiations too. Because they weren't making a lot of money.
All right.
And I told him I got $10,000. He says, you did? I said, yeah. He said, are you happy? I said, yeah, I'm happy. And he said, that's the minimum. And it was. But how would I know that? There's no knowledge. And I tell that story. And I looked at him. I said, you know what, Stan? It's never been about money with me. It's always been having fun and enjoying having a chance to play. And so I had, had a lot of 11 good years before I had to step away from the game. But it was never about the money.
Yeah. When did you start Tom Reed's Hockey City Pub, and how did that come about?
Well, I knew that the Wild were coming to town, so I talked to who was a buddy of mine at that time about starting a business downtown, finding a place. So I knew that places around there, an arena, would probably thrive. Mm-hmm. And there wasn't a lot in downtown St. Paul at the time. I mean, you had McGovern's was down there. You had Cassettas. But other than that, there was really nothing else.
Mm-hmm.
And so I bought a bar. It was called Judy K's at the time, and it was a pretty tough bar. It was really a place a lot of people would not go into. Let me put it that way. There's no windows in it. There's no kitchen. Old bathrooms. The bar was against the wall. It was just not very nice. So operated for just about a year and then shut it down and remodeled the whole place. And since then, we did the expansion. Since then, I've expanded again to where we have the patio, and we do a lot of corporate outings. It might be a retirement or birthday parties or graduations or groom's dinners and stuff like that. And so it's really played pay dividends for us to have that, and the doors open up on the patio, and it's turned out to be pretty good, and the fans have been great, and I've got over 500 items that are memorabilia all over the wall, so I think a lot of people come just to, they know about us. It's more like a museum for them.
Yeah. Danny asks, actually, do you have a favorite piece of memorabilia at your, yeah, at your bar?
There's one. It was from the early 70s, and it was the player signed it, but it was a full sheet. It had not been cut yet. And when my dad passed away in 91, I went home, and I found this downstairs that was rolled up in the corner. I have no idea where it came from, how we got it. But I have that, I had it framed and put in there, and wow. I'm in the picture too. And Perot and Gordie Howe, and I mean, Jean Beliveau and the Richards. I mean, it goes on and on, all Hall of Famers, Jacques Lemaire, and it's great. So that really has a lot of sentimental value for me.
Yeah, I like the picture of your penalty shot against Dryden.
Have I ever told you that story?
Yeah. I mean, that'll be living infamy. There's no doubt about it. Actually, here's a good one from Greg. It said Goldie had the shuffled. Was there a Tom Reed goal celebration?
No, but there should have been because it didn't happen very often. But you know, and notice this, we didn't do like they do the fist bump and everything else now going by the bench. It was the old Bud Grant's line, you know, pretend like you've been there before.
Right.
And so, you know, you get a goal, and it's nice, you know. But it was never, in my era too, it was never about scoring.
Yeah.
It was more about defending.
Yeah.
And I can remember we had a game in Pittsburgh, and I think of that because in the old Igloo, Ren Blair was our coach at the time. And at the end of the second period, we're behind 3-0, and he came in, and he was livid. None of the forwards at the defense because we gave up 3 goals. Now, we haven't scored a goal yet, so it's just all on us. So he goes in the back room, and he's in there. We know he's going to come back out and chastise us again, and we're waiting. The first buzzer goes. He doesn't come out. The second buzzer goes. He doesn't come out. Now we got a bang on the door, and one of the linesmen said, you guys better get out here. There's going to be a delay of game. So we get out there. Well, who's going to coach? We don't have a coach. And somebody said, well, Caesar, Gump's in that. Why don't you coach? You're not playing. He said, okay. And he looked at me, and I'm a young kid at the time. He says, Tom, you start the third period. I said, okay. He said to Wayne Hillman, we call him Booner, you start the third period with Tom. He said, I'm not starting the third period. I started the game. I'm not starting the third period, too. So he said to Leo Boyvin, who just passed away recently as well, he said, Leo, will you start? All right, I'll start, but I'm not going to be out there very long. So have somebody ready. So we start playing, and we hear this noise, and we look behind us, and here comes Ren over top of the seats. What had happened was he went in the back room to prepare his speech against us, went to come in the room, and we're gone. Went to go out, and the door was padlocked from the outside. He couldn't get out. He's banging on the door. Well, there's a tunnel there, and the security guy had walked down to watch the game. So he never heard it. The crowd was hollering and screaming. So he never heard him. Finally, he walked back. What's that noise? And realized Ren was in there. And Ren thought we locked him in. We had no idea where he was. We didn't lock the door. We just went and played. So,
is that your Ken asked, what is your favorite Ren Blair story? Is that your favorite, or do you have others?
Oh, I mean, with Ren, there was always something with Ren. Ren would come in, and if we won the game, it was coaching. If we lost the game, it was the players. And he would lay down on his back in his office with his feet up on a chair and a cool towel on his forehead in between periods. You think he was playing the game. But we're in Montreal, and Ray Cullen was our captain, and we're sitting there getting ready for the start of the third period. And Ren came over and he put his arms around and says, come on, guys, we got to tie up this game. And Cully looks at me and looks up at Ren. And he says, Ren, it is tied. It is. When did we get that last one? There's always funny stories.
Man, that is funny. Carl asks, who is your favorite opponent to play that you really respected, and who's the player that you despise playing against?
Jean Beliveau. Was that player. As a player, as a youngster growing up, Mr. Beliveau was always my favorite player.
Mm-hmm.
And now I'm playing against him. I'm in Montreal. There's a breakout. It's one-on-one. It's him against me. And I'm thinking, oh, boy, this is not going to end well. I can see it.
Yeah.
And he was a big man, too, and just a classy, classy guy. He came down, and I think he knew it, what I was thinking, because he looked at me, and I'm looking at him, and he threw a head fake, and I went that way, and he went the other way. He went around me. He didn't score, but I'll always remember that play as long as I live.
All right.
You know, I don't think there's a lot of players that, I mean, sometimes you get upset with players during the course of a game. Steve Durbano was a guy that he was nuts. He was crazy. I mean, he is one of his wife. I mean, he was out one night and she got mad. Said, "If you don't get home, I'm going to kill the dog." And he went home and she had hung the dog.
Holy shit!
Yeah, yeah. I think he got mad one time at the referee in the penalty box and he took his skate off and threw it at the referee. There's some loose cannons out there. There have been, but I think for the most part, you know, you play hard, you work hard. We always had a great relationship with the officials.
Mm-hmm.
And you could holler at them and so on. And I remember John Ashley always he'd put one hand on the hip and he said, "Tom, that's a 5. Now, if I put my other hand on the hip, it's going to be a 10 at misconduct. You know that." "Yes, Mr. Ashley, I'm leaving now." Yeah. Go away.
That is funny. You know, I mean, you mentioned that, and it dawns on me how different the game is today. Like, I was talking to Dane Mizutani, the Pioneer press writer, about this the other day in the press box. I like that they've gotten rid of those, I've covered scary incidents, right? A lot of Scott Stevens hits, a lot, you know, Mike Modano getting knocked out in the corner, Jeremy Roenick getting cross-checked into Lindros knocked out. But it's a very different game today because guys, they do stuff in the middle of the ice that years ago would have gotten you blown up. You know, I mean, the other night, Kaprizov is just dangling head down, doing ridiculous stuff at the red line, and Brock Nelson just literally hits the brakes and doesn't come near him. Yeah. Instead of just, you're supposed to pop him there. But that stuff never happens anymore.
Very seldom does it happen. Then the penalties are pretty severe now, too, when it does happen. But in our day, unless a guy died, yeah. I mean, you might get a 2-minute penalty. But a lot of things happen with stick work and with skates, yeah. I mean, and, you know, spears, and that's just was the nature of the beast. You know, we'd have full bench clearing brawls, and you know, and it would carry on for, you know, 10-15 minutes.
Yeah.
Then the NHL put a rule in that anybody who clears a bench is $100,000 fine. We have not had one since.
Yeah.
Not one.
Yeah.
But things happen on the ice. You still have to have those guys out there that are kind of your protectors too. But the day of just being a protector is gone. You have to bring a lot more to the game, a lot more elements to the game.
But than just do you think like the no open ice hitting is, I mean, I know that it probably stems from the fact that they got rid of headshots, which I absolutely applaud, but it doesn't mean that you can't pop a guy.
No, you can. I think the biggest problem today is the speed of the game is mm-hmm. so fast. The elimination of the two-line pass has made it even that much faster.
Right.
And it's harder to hit players. They always say, hit Gretzky. You can't catch him.
Yeah.
You know, when they change that rule, it really, to me, really made the game that much quicker and faster for everybody yep. else. And, you know, people come, they want to see the finesse of the game. At the same time, they want to see the physical part of the game, too.
Yep.
Watch the fans when there's a fight. They say, you got to abolish fighting. They've done a pretty good job of protecting the players, even in a fight. Now, once yeah. in a while, somebody will get hit. But when the helmet falls off, the linesmen are right there to break it up
yep.
immediately. And the players themselves respect each other too.
Yeah.
In the old days, you take a Bob Probert, something happened, you go down, he's on top of you, and he's just pummeling away.
Yeah.
You know, you just keep on swinging. That's what they do.
No doubt. No doubt about that. One last question before I wanted to transition a little bit to the Minnesota Wild, and then we'll head over to the morning skate. Tell everybody about your wife, and her awesome job that she has. And I don't know if a lot of people know what she does for a living.
Yeah, a lot of people don't know. my wife, Patty, she worked for the North Stars. That's where I met her, and mm-hmm. she worked in public relations there. But she's has a career now. She's been with Mario Andretti since mid-90 when Mario retired.
Mm-hmm.
And he's a wonderful man. I mean, he's just a prince of a guy as a boss and as a human being.
Right.
And I tell one story about Mario because this is him. I was at the Indy 500 one year. He invited me down to his, he had a suite and turned to, and just his family were allowed to be there. But he had some celebrities in there at the same time, which was kind of fun, too. Phyllis Diller was there. And
wow.
It was just a number of people. But the day after, he had 3 cars that he had to return to the dealership that he was allowed to use. And 2 of them were really hot cars, and he had a Chevy Biscayne. And he said, would you mind driving one of the cars out? Your wife will drive the other, and I'll drive one. I said, yeah, not a problem. So we're in the parking lot, and he pulls out. And just as he pulls out, there's this van comes up around us, honking the horn, and we all stop. And we didn't know what was going on. This elderly gentleman gets out of the van, and he's kind of hobbling a little bit, and he comes over. Mr. Andretti said, could I just get your autograph? You're my hero. And he got out, Mario got out of his car, and he talked to the guy for probably 5 or 6 minutes. We didn't have cell cameras in those days.
Yeah, right.
Signed the autograph for him. And that older gentleman walked back to his van like he was 20 years old.
Yeah.
He was so excited. And then we take off for the car dealership. And Mario drives 230 miles an hour. And those cars, even to this day, he'll drive them 210, 220, 230. But I'm the third car. He's going about 85. My wife's following him. I'm falling behind. And I'm thinking, I'm going to get pulled over. And they're going to say, what are you doing? I said, I'm following me. Already. Yeah, sure. Okay.
Yeah, right.
Never got pulled over. But he's a great guy. But she travels. They've traveled the world together at different events doing things and so on. Just got back from the UK a few weeks ago.
Yeah.
So.
Didn't you, was it Jacques or Bruce that went out to dinner with him in Tampa a couple years ago? Or
it was Bruce.
Yeah. I remember he was on top of the world.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, getting to meet him.
Yeah, we went out for dinner, and Mario was so gracious. And, of course, he's world-renowned. I mean, he's probably the most recognizable race car driver in the world.
Where'd you go? Did you go to Burns?
We went to Burns.
I love Burns.
And it was right across from our hotel, so it made it nice and convenient.
Yeah. I can't wait. In a couple of weeks, we're going to be in Tampa. I want to go to Lou Nanny brought me to a place that Phil Esposito recommended to him. Last time we were there, the meat market. It's it's just awesome. Definitely going back there. Meat market. So highly recommend that one.
Expense account.
Definitely. No doubt about that. Yeah. Let's talk a little bit about the Wild. You know, what do you make of the team right now? I mean, 7 come from behind victories, 7 one goal wins. They're making it exciting, that's for sure.
They don't quit.
Yeah.
They really don't quit. I mean, there's a team. They do have the superstars? No, they don't have the superstars. But what they have is they have a group of individuals that right now trust each other. I don't care if it's on the defense. You got 3 sets of defense, and your 4 lines are all working hard. And like Dean says, he's asked about matching lines. He doesn't match lines.
Yeah.
No, I don't match lines. We feel that any line we have can play against any line on the other side. And it's been fun, and these guys are winning. And you know yourself, and you've been in situations where a team is losing and how depressing it is to go to work sometimes. I can't imagine what it's like here with the Arizona Coyotes. They won their first game the other night beating the Seattle Kraken. That's their first win. Won 12 games. And how difficult it must be for these players to come to the office. If you have a bad day at the office, next day might be better. But when it's continuous like that, you don't want to go to the office. And the same thing with players. It's, you know, the paychecks don't mean anything. When you're playing, you want to win. I mean, that's the whole idea of playing in the National Hockey to get that Stanley Cup.
I think the thing that really makes the Wild a team that could make some noise in this conference, besides the fact that there really are no juggernauts in this conference at all, not even Colorado right now, is the fact that they have such depth scoring. I mean, we have not seen Kaprizov or Fiala do much this season, yet Hartman's got 6 goals, Foligno's got 4, Eriksson Ek's got 4, Duhame's scoring, Sturm scoring, Bukestad scoring. That is why they're winning games right now. It's certainly not because of Kaprizov and Fiala right now.
Well, and you're right. It's not those guys aren't working hard there. I mean, they're getting opportunities, just not working for them right now, but it will. At some point, you know, a goal scorer is still going to be a goal scorer.
Right.
That's going to happen. But everyone else is you know, lifting up the team. Everyone else is contributing. All the lines are contributing. And that's what you have to have. And you have to have goaltending. Goaltending is critical. And Cam Talbot has been terrific. I mean, when you look at the numbers, you have to look at the wins. And maybe the save percentage aren't always where you think they should be.
Yep.
But at the same time, if the team is winning for you and making those big saves, like, look at the game when they had 2 breakaways in Pittsburgh.
Zucker and Marino.
He stopped both of those.
Yep.
I mean, and that turned the whole game.
Yep.
I mean, it looked like, we're going to lose this one. But the goaltender made the save.
Yep. Was it Winnipeg, too? One of their overtime wins, same thing. He just, like, you know, he didn't have a great regulation, but all of a sudden, when the game is on the line, he made game-saving stops.
Yeah. Was it Dylan that broke in there?
Yeah.
It was Dylan came in, and he made that save and goes right back the other way, and they wound up winning.
Yeah, it was. It's pretty, pretty cool.
They're fun to watch. Yeah, they really are.
Yeah. Last question is a good one from Jeff saying, "What if you were, you know, somebody that like we just you just mentioned how Arizona is a team that's very beatable. Minnesota's coming in here. They've won three in a row. They have all these come from behind wins, buzzer beaters, all this stuff. What would you do in the locker room before the game to get these guys to prevent a letdown, to not go in there, take this team lightly and go out there and just hammer them?
Well, you have to look at the success you've had too. You don't want to be on a negative plane. You want to keep everything in a positive and upbeat. And you know, you want to keep that energy going and just remind the players, you know, this team, you know, they won their last game. So that gives them a little more jump here right now. I know it's Seattle, but Seattle's not a bad team.
Yeah, the Wild learned that last week.
Yeah, they found that. Yeah, they took them a little bit lightly, perhaps.
Yep.
And that can happen. But I think coming in there like that and have the players have some input too.
Yeah.
You know, and I think that one thing that Billy has done is he's established this team with three very solid captains.
Yeah.
And I think that goes a long way to the success of this hockey club because they care about, they're more of a, somebody said it, I think it was Dean, they're more of a welcoming committee for new players coming in, which was not the way it was in the past. But I think, you know, when you're on a roll like this, you want to keep it going, but you can't take every team in the NHL can win at any given day. So you better be ready.
I always say that about, I mean, you a guy like Spurgeon, you know, it's impossible for you to meet him and not feel at ease immediately. He's got this calming way about him, but it's the same thing with a guy like Foligno. Like, and Foligno, by the way, always plays incredible in this building, and he's been so good the last couple of games. Yeah. But like same thing, it's like they mean it. Dumba, these guys mean that they want to make a locker room where everybody could feel comfortable, everybody inclusive, all that type of stuff.
Yeah, people say, well, who's the MVP of the team right now? And, you know, there's a few guys, but Foligno, to me, is the
absolutely
guy that has really stepped up, and he's kind of the leader on the ice there just by what he does.
Yep.
And Duhaime is coming into that fold as well, you know, being a little more aggressive, being a little more physical in a good way. Not in a bad way, but in a good way.
Well, I mean, we saw it even with Beckman being up for three games and just the way that Foligno treats him like a little kid brother. It's just really neat. It really is neat to see right now just how everything is coming together. Last question, Tom, you know, I always think like I've covered this league now for 27 years and it feels like a lifetime for me. Like I'm freaking tired. Tired. I'm ready to go. You've been doing this forever. You got to feel like this is just a dream come true. We're sitting in the sun under a couple palm trees in Arizona right now when there's about to be a snowstorm in the next couple of days in Minnesota. You've just got to like be just like so tickled that you've been able to spend a lifetime in this sport.
Mike, I started traveling in junior in 1964 and I've never stopped. It's been the same for me all the years. Even when the Dallas Stars moved and Norm Green came in, bought the team. I refused to work for him. I was doing radio and TV at the time. I just said, not working for him. I never met the man. He came up one time to meet me. I didn't want to meet him. I said, I really don't want to meet you.
Yeah.
Because I knew what he was. I told people, he's going to move this team.
Mm-hmm.
3 years, he's going to move it. Oh, no, he won't do that. You know, it's hockey is inbred in Minnesota. Well, it's not. And we found that out. But I've enjoyed every minute of it. I mean, sometimes it's difficult. You know, we get home and sometimes you talk about the snowstorm and you know, it's 20 below zero and your car's covered in snow and you got to walk over the tarmac and carry your luggage. It's a little bit different, but you know what? It's been great.
Well, think of me on Sunday morning when I get back to that hotel at 1 a.m. and I got to wake up at 4 for my 6 a.m. flight home. So sometimes I wish I was on your charter. Well, hey, Tom, this was a delight. It's amazing that this is the first time that I've had you on the podcast. I appreciate you coming on. You want to tell everybody who was supposed to be on?
Mike Badano. And also Claire Bell the Clown, but I was a third choice.
Well, Tom, this is awesome. I really appreciate it. Thanks to Tom Reed. And here's a word from our sponsors.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
Hey, Frank, a little birdie told me you don't need a satellite dish to get DirecTV.
Which little birdie? Was it Jimmy the Sparrow?
It's a figure of speech. Point is, you can stream DirecTV over the internet now.
Oh, sure. Next you're going to tell me those big birds are made of metal and filled with people, right?
You mean airplanes?
Stream DirecTV without a satellite dish. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Terms or restrictions apply.
It's only a kick. A jump. A block. It's only a serve. It's only a tackle. A run. It's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
Thanks again to Tom Reed for joining this week's edition of Straight from the Source, and thanks to you all for listening to it. I always, always, always appreciate it. Quinn Hughes of the Vancouver Canucks is Craig Custance and Sean Gentile's guest this week on the Athletic Hockey Show USA, and Rob Pizzo from CBC Sports and Jesse Granger and Sarah Sivian have the Athletic Hockey Show Wednesday at the Athletic. Thanks for listening to Straight from the Source. Please follow us on your favorite podcast platform, and don't forget to leave a rating and a review. Subscribe to the Athletic Audio Plus on Apple Podcasts to get all the bonus content from our entire network. You could start with a 30-day free trial, then just 99 cents a month after that. It's not even a dollar, it's 99 cents. And right now, get an annual subscription to The Athletic for just $3.99 a month when you visit theathletic.com/straight from the source. Talk to you next week, everybody.